This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on Friday, April 14th, 2017. My name is Audrey Raj, and on the show with me today is Arvind Yuvaraj, who just got back from Echelon Malaysia 2017 in Penang.
Yeah, and that was so much fun, you know. Hello, happy Tamil New Year to everyone. Happy Vaisakhi and blessed Good Friday to all the Christians listening. It's almost the end of Lent for our Christian friends.
Yes.
Easter is just a few days away, guys.
Yeah, indeed. And it's going to be a crazy evening on the roads today if you think about it, as people rush to the temple, to the Gurdwara for blessings, of course, and to church for a Good Friday service. And my grandma used to tell me this every year, it always rains on Good Friday. So guys, please drive safe or ride safe this evening, all right?
You know, I'm gonna keep that in mind. And now every Good Friday, I'm going to see if it rains every other year.
You know what would be ironic? If it doesn't rain today.
Because we said it. So we jinxed it. And also the Sinhalese New Year, and it's Songkran 2 today. So that's the Thai New Year. So, you know, it's quite fascinating how they all overlap, you know. Yeah. You know what else overlaps, though? Every Malaysian's love for Doraemon. Like, it doesn't matter if you're Indian, you're Malay, you're Chinese. Being a kid in Malaysia means that Doraemon was a big part of your childhood awareness in one way or the other.
I bet that brought back a lot of memories for you there, Arvind.
Well, right in the nostalgia. Like, it hit me just in the nostalgia.
I wasn't really into Doraemon myself, but I know what you mean. I know it's a Friday and no one really wants to hear a sad story, but we thought we'd give you the bad news first and then follow up with some pretty positive stories. I'm sure a lot of you listening would have grown up watching cartoons like Sailor Moon, Ultraman, Crayon Shinchan, but the famous Japanese to Malay translated cartoon was undoubtedly the super future cat known as Doraemon. Sadly though, the publisher of the local Doraemon comic books will be officially closing down on May 31st.
Yeah, but I think there's two ways to look at this. It's sad in a way, but it also shows that the company had a really good run and has managed to become a huge part of Malaysian pop culture, you know. I mean, we picked this story from the Malaysian Insight as like a major article, so that tells you just how important, like, a comic book company, that's something that seems like very simple, right, is, you know, how important it is to our collective time as children growing up in Malaysia.
You know, like, for me, for some reason, Doraemon just didn't stick. Maybe I was too busy with, like, Thundercats and Transformers and Care Bears. I can't believe I just said that on air. But I knew of Doraemon, and I knew, like, every other episode was about something ajaib, and, like, all my friends were into the comics and the cartoons. And you know what I just found out, like, while I was reading this article, right? Doraemon's actually a cat.
Yeah, I think I just got to know about that like a year ago. I didn't care about what it was.
And everything is like falling into place for me because, like, the fellow wears like a little collar and a bell. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're still not used to seeing cats like on two legs, right?
Yeah, except for Puss in Boots.
Oh, yeah.
And he can sword fight and stuff. So,
yes.
My favorite ajaib thing, I think, was Kuih Ajaib because it could make Nobita smart. It was called something like that. And I wish that I had that when I was doing my exams.
Right.
Yeah, so I wish I had a Doraemon to give me like Kuih Ajaib, and then I didn't have to study anymore. But I got into the comics because it was fun. It kept me occupied for a while. It was easy to carry around wherever I could go. I wasn't bored, and they were cheap. That's the most important part. They were cheap. Yeah, they were not like a burden on the wallet, on my parents' wallet, not mine. But so the office is called Tora Aman, and it has an office in Puchong's Bandar Kinrara Industrial Center. Calling it a publisher kind of undermines its efforts because I don't think we realized just how much they did in there. They took all these manga and would translate them from Japanese to Chinese and to Malay, which made some of these stories like instantly accessible and relatable to the children here. These comics are as Malaysian as they are Japanese, and it's all because of Tora Aman, as well as those like weirdly dubbed cartoons on TV, which I can't get over.
So Tora Aman announced on Tuesday that it will be closing via its Facebook page, and immediately there was apparently a long line of late 20s, early 30s people waiting outside to buy the comics in bulk. Like you said, you know, it's a staple of our childhood, and if you're going to get some for your collection, this is possibly your last chance.
Yeah, and we need to talk about how or why this happened. So although the reasons are pretty obvious, because, you know, kids have gone online, print is suffering and pop culture has changed to like a more Western angle thanks to the new superhero boom and superhero movies. Mm-hmm. It's more Marvel and DC. So Tora Aman owner John Baptist Chong Kok Ah said that the decision to close the company was not because he ran out of money, but because there were too many websites offering comics for free. Mm-hmm. The business was no longer profitable, adding that it had been killing, like quote unquote, killing his business for the past decade. Chong said that 6%, the 6% goods and taxes service, goods and services tax, sorry, or GST as it's lovingly called, is not helping the situation one bit. Apparently, sales started to drop 70% due to the economic crisis in 2007. And after the GST was enforced, it went down to
90%. But I don't know, you know, can we really blame GST for this? I mean, we can blame the price hike for Roti Canai on GST because that's a restaurant owner's go-to excuse. But aren't children's books not affected by GST?
They're not. And I think that he says that it's an indirect impact. I think it's more towards people going online, and it's, you know, print media itself on a whole list is not doing well, right? I don't know. He said that people have started to control every cent they spend, and that their disposable income has been shrinking since the introduction of GST. Comics used to cost $3.50 each in 1993. I think for me it was about $3.90, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And then the following year the price was revised to $4.90, although it still did not profit publishers. And the last price was $5.90, so almost $6, which Chong thought was way too much for low income families. I mean, I can sort of understand where he's coming from. We don't have to get into the demographics of the readers for these comics, but I used to love Doraemon comics. I have a whole bunch still at home. I think it's stocked away somewhere. But I don't know if I would have been, it would have been easy for me to buy them as a kid if it was $5.90 instead of $4 or $3 something, or however much I bought it for.
Yeah, his intentions are pretty good. Tora Aman wanted to keep the price low for as long as they could absorb it, but they eventually gave in when costs went up. But we all know how the ringgit is dropping, or plunging would be a better word.
I think the common term for it now is the shrinket.
That's harsh. Okay, not only the ringgit, but shrinket. But the cost of living is going up, and entertainment is available for free online. That's a massive factor.
Keyword is free.
Yeah, so maybe there really is no space for our local pop culture scene for printed comic books like Doraemon and his friends, you know?
Yeah, but then even the story of how Doraemon came to Malaysia is actually very interesting. The original is, the manga series is written and drawn by Fujiko F. Fujio and is in Japanese. But there were copies made for the Chinese market in Taiwan and Hong Kong. So there were suppliers, quote-unquote suppliers, in Malaysia who pirated those and then sold them here. So they were like cheap reprints of these books. And the books were hit among the local Chinese students, right? So Chong saw this and he thought, what if he could get other kids to read these as well by translating it? You know, so Chong basically knew a guy who knew the agent for Fujiko. The agent's name was Akira Hashima. And he did his best to earn that Japanese trust, and he got the license to translate Doraemon from Japanese to BM after that.
Wow, and he has nothing with him in 1993, just some samples of his published work, so it's kind of a miracle that they agreed, you know?
Yeah, and the best part about all this is that he made sure he maintained some language quality when translating from, you know, from Japanese to Malay. You see some of the, even the local comic books, and the BM is kind of like Bahasa Pasar, right? They say, you know, it's all like a mix, but he says that he wanted to maintain like a proper language when translating these books. He said that he felt strongly about publishing books in the Malay language for children and youth, you know, because they would pick it up pretty easily.
And Doraemon pretty much became a bridge between the different races too, you know. It became something to talk about during recess, waktu rehat. And the robot cat and his human friends became part of, you know, us Malaysians for the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, which is a long time, and which is why I said that they've had a good run, you know. Nobody expected them to last forever, you know. All good things must come to an end, right? And I feel like if you're going to go out, then this is the way to do it. They were like an influential part of like Malaysian kids growing up for the last couple of decades. And then, I mean, who else can boast about something like that? Who else can say something like that?
Maybe,
you know,
something completely different, but not Doraemon.
Yeah, not Doraemon. Yeah, there's no shame in shutting down. They've had a good life, and who knows? Maybe he'll be able to, you know, like work his way online one day. Maybe like a daily Doraemon app comic book app. Like, who knows?
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, actually. Mm-hmm. Capitalize on the nostalgia and the buzz.
Yep.
Anyway, apart from Doraemon, Tora Aman also translated and published stuff like Detective Conan, Great Teacher Onizuka, or GTO, and Captain Tsubasa. Mm-hmm. Chong said that Tora Aman would be bidding its readers sayonara, goodbye, on May 31st, and could not have come this far without the children who grew up reading the comics, and said that they held on this long and lived well because of all of your support.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like, by the way, people should realize that this man, like, has never given an interview throughout his publishing career.
Huh.
Yeah, he's never done it.
We have to get him on then.
Yeah, we have to bring... Yeah, I was thinking about the same thing.
Yeah.
Yep. He chose to be like an invisible hand, you know, all this while. He has never... This is the first interview that he's doing. So it's kind of bittersweet that he decides to do one now, you know, for the Malaysian Insight, you know, just as they're closing shop, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a true blue Malaysian story. I mean, we talk about harmony and unity and being colorblind. This is something that was all that. And it was just I don't want to call it silly, but it was a silly cartoon about a cat that pulled magic inventions out of his, like, interdimensional stomach pocket, you know?
Yep.
I guess we'd like to end this by saying kudos on a great run to Tora Aman on capturing a multiracial audience and for producing a massive part of Malaysian pop culture for a couple of generations. Kudos.
Yeah, and I'm still holding on for, like, a Doraemon comic book app. You know, if he gets to do it, go ahead and do it. I'll download it first.
We'll suggest it to him when he comes in.
Yes. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, by the way. And when we come back, we'll talk about Singapore and driverless buses. Maybe they came out of Doraemon's stomach. Who knows? All right, so time for some music. Here's Alabama Shakes with Gimme All Your Love, BFM 89.9.
Best for meetings, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with Arvin and Audrey. So, Arvin, we heard earlier this week that driverless buses are set to hit Singapore roads by 2020. So this makes me think about all the drawings we did in school on Wawasan 2020. Remember all those Sydney projects, right?
With the futuristic buildings and the futuristic cars.
So by our imagination, we should be seeing flying cars and, you know, like, all those satellite buildings by 2020. But I guess Malaysia will be lucky if it sees less traffic on the roads in 3 years' time. You know?
I wouldn't be surprised if there's more traffic on the road in 3 years' time. Yeah, so while we were, you know, trying to cope with the rush hour gridlock here, 40-seater driverless buses will be on the roads in, of course, in Singapore. A collaboration between the Land Transport Authority and ST Kinetics. The buses use GPS positioning for their location as well as to scan their surroundings for other vehicles and pedestrians.
And this company, ST Engineering, also plans to deploy several mobility on demand vehicles, or MODVs, each seating about just 15 to 20 passengers. And these vehicles will run in areas like Sentosa, where there are, like, heavy tourist traffic. Visitors can call for these on-demand vehicles with their phones or via kiosks around the island.
Yeah, so while some are, like, really excited with the prospect of more efficient transportation in Singapore, like, it, you know, wasn't super efficient already, others have some concerns about these driverless buses. So according to an article in the Vulcan Post, people are already beginning to talk about the accountability, like who the accountable parties will be when accidents happen.
Then, of course, there's safety. So, while cybersecurity experts from A-STAR, the National University of Singapore, and Singapore University of Technology and Design, they say they will come together to ensure the utmost safety of passengers, Singaporean citizens say this remains lip service until the public can visibly see these vehicles in operation.
You know what this reminds me of? You know, in Logan, you had the trucks...
Yeah,
that drove on there on the freeway.
Yes.
You had, like, those automatic trucks that went back. This reminds me of that.
Those,
like, exactly.
Were scary, actually.
They were because they don't. There's no human driving it, right? So I don't know if that's good or bad. Sometimes I trust a computer more to avoid people on the road. Yeah. So many are also already talking about how technology like this will impact future jobs, because, you know, with AI and robotics and all, people are always worried about this. As they roll out more driverless vehicles, will Singapore start seeing a negative effect on the livelihoods of bus drivers, just as how Grab and Uber has affected taxi drivers?
I think this seems unlikely at the moment, because the driverless buses will require a driver on board, you know, as well as job reassignments of drivers to manage the buses at desk jobs. So they will be, you know, somehow reassigned. But, you know, that the exact effect of this is still up in the air.
Yeah. So, like, some of our trains here, like the LRT and all, sometimes you still get a driver up front. Whatever our neighbors' concerns are, I have to say that the adoption of driverless technology is something that I'm definitely looking forward to. If the technology works as flawlessly as it's supposed to, like, imagine the impact, right? And then, of course, all that will be left to debate debate is how cool does these vehicles look like? How are they going to be designed? You know, how futuristic are they going to look when they come out?
Yeah, all right. Okay, moving on to our next story, something that doesn't really have to look cool to be awesome.
Yeah. So recently we heard about this company, Dot Inc., which landed the top spot at Slush Tokyo's pitch contest. Mm. Dot Inc. is a maker of medtech devices for the visually impaired, and it saw off competition from 75 other startups and was praised for having a lot of passion, catering to the huge market, and people are already saying that they will do amazing things in the world.
Yeah, so what Dot does is it produces a braille smartwatch targeting the hundreds of millions of visually impaired people that it claims were left behind by modern technology companies. Mm-hmm. So Dot is an active braille device which connects to your smartphone via Bluetooth, and what it does, basically, it receives any text information from apps on your phone with buttons allowing the users to input information of their own.
Yeah, but the Dot smartwatch is like no other smartwatch because there's no touchscreen display to swipe your way through menu screens or like Siri-style virtual assistants, but it can receive notifications, whether that's from WhatsApp or from a text message, and uses the startup's four-cell braille technology to help the blind and visually impaired read messages, respond to them, and even dismiss them if they want.
Mm. And while the world is getting excited about this new device, contrary to recent reports that the Dot is now available to buy, it's actually not quite ready for the masses. The company has apparently been shipping testing models to various sources but are holding it back until they are very sure and confident about the quality and polishing of the UX, the user experience.
Yeah. You know, I feel this is how technology should be. It should be inclusive like this, you know, because some segments are completely left out. So if they can do this to help the visually impaired, to help the blind even use this technology, that'll be a huge thing.
Yeah.
Right? If they can translate that braille into something that the visually impaired can understand.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we first heard about the braille smartwatch back in 2014 when the wearables looked very different from its final design.
Yeah.
We are now up to generation 3 after the first and second generation versions went through like hundreds of samples and mock-ups. If you notice, the slim, almost fitness tracker-like design is now gone, being replaced with a more traditional round body, watch body. Apparently, the sleek designs compromise on, you know, like how much hardware could fit into the device. The circular approach meant that there's more room that could be allocated for hardware than a square model. I think you can check out these pictures. We will put pictures up. It's on the link on our podcast page.
You know, I actually like the round look more than I did like all those squarish, you know.
Mm-hmm. Square is very traditional.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you can imagine with a watch like for the visually impaired, one of the most problematic aspects would have to be like the watch display itself, which is something that Dot has worked on from scratch, and it uses elements such as haptic feedback to detect the movement of, you know, the user's fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And the people at Dot admit the biggest challenge is trying to envision a blind and visually impaired user experience from a sighted person's perspective. That's got to be tough.
Yeah, and along with notification support, the Dot will also tell the time, let you set alarms, use it as a stopwatch, and also includes an accelerometer and gyroscope motion sensors. One of the features that has been overlooked is that the Dot will also let you practice braille, and there's plans to localize languages to be able to translate words that can pop up onto the watch.
And they're already talking about Dot Watch 2, like the second version,
the
sequel. Yeah, so this time not just with Bluetooth connectivity, but a chipset that allows for active GPS.
Yeah, I'm excited for Dot and the good things it could possibly do for the future. Like, this is a startup, you know, to keep track of.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. All right, time for some music, but when we come back, we run down all the podcasts you should catch up on this weekend. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes. This is Audrey Raj. Arvind Yuvaraj is with me in the studio, and that was a pretty abrupt end to the song. All right, it's time to talk about some of the podcasts you need to catch up on this weekend. We had some pretty good shows on Enterprise this week, right?
Yeah.
And all of them are available on our BFM app, on the App Store and on Google Play right now. For those who don't have the app yet, go download it.
Yeah. So on Monday, we had Shira Hussain in the studio, and she spoke about the art of giving and receiving feedback. So basically, giving feedback is one of the most crucial parts of self-development, whether it's related to work or personal matters, and it involves expressing appreciation as well as concern for people on the receiving end. Receiving feedback, on the other hand, shows openness and willingness to get better at a subject and construct improvement without being defensive. So Shira laid down the art of this tricky exchange, because sometimes feedback can be taken the wrong way and even given the wrong way, right?
Yeah.
And and it's a pretty cool podcast, very insightful, and we definitely think you should check it out if you've had trouble giving or listening to feedback, or even if you'd like to, you know, just sharpen your skills a bit.
Yeah, and then on Wednesday, we had a really, really cool show by our resident techie, Jeff Sandhu, and he asked the question, how real is Star Wars? So to answer that question, we had Stephen Miles, Chief Technology Officer, Asia Pacific and Japan for CA Technologies. He was in the studio, and all that space travel, laser fights, robot companies is what makes science fiction absolutely breathtaking, right? But the funny thing is, if we look at our smartphones, our smartwatches, rocket ships to Mars, drones that fly themselves, machines talking to each other and talking to us, all these were previously figments of the imagination at some point. So Stephen Miles and Jeff, they discussed the possibility of this futuristic landscape. I don't know, I just want lightsabers to be real, you know, that would make
me happy. I know,
yeah. And speaking about the future and crazy ideas, you spoke to Elon, well, you didn't speak to Elon Musk.
Oh, I wish I spoke to Elon Musk. Oh.
But like, you spoke about Elon Musk on this week's Five for Fortune.
Yeah, I did. I think Elon Musk is doing some big things, and I think that his ideas will be, you know, form the foundation of our future, right?
Yeah.
And but not everyone thinks that way, and it's fine because that's their opinion. But there's also a huge consensus that the things, you know, they think that his ideas are insane and far-fetched and all that. So I basically did this episode to discuss some of those ideas, like the Hyperloop travel, space travel, you know, a world connected by Wi-Fi. And I know that they sound bonkers, but they're actually pretty doable when you think about it. So that's what I did on this week's episode. And I'll continue to do another episode about that next week. So, you know, definitely check that out.
Yeah, nice. All right. That's all the time we have for this week. Be sure to check out those podcasts as well as all our other programs on the BFM app again, on the App Store and on Google Play. Just go download it. You won't regret it. This is Audrey Raj together with Arvind Muvaraj, wishing everyone a pleasant, fun weekend ahead, and also Happy New Year and
Happy Tamil New Year, Happy Vaisakhi, Happy Songkran, yeah, and a blessed Easter
yes.
for everyone.
All right. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.